Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Haunted History. I'm your host, Megan, and every week I'm going to be taking you on a little journey around our world's haunted history. We're going to jump right into today's episode, and I'm really excited about it because it's so wild that it's almost completely unbelievable. Trust me, when I was reading it, I was just like, wow, this is insane. Also, quick side note, we're going to be working on some fun behind-the-scenes content and a really big giveaway coming up very soon. So follow my socials so you don't miss out on those updates. And now, buckle up, because you're in for a ride. This story contains descriptions of domestic violence, child mortality, and references to persons that died by suicide. Horror movies are designed to manufacture feelings of fear inside of us, and a good horror movie should leave you shaken, with maybe a couple of particularly vivid images seared into your mind. One such movie, a movie that marked a generation of horror enthusiasts, is the cult classic Poltergeist. But Poltergeist created another, maybe even more enduring legacy, one that has spread through our collective unconscious. Some of you may even be peripherally aware of it. If you're thinking of the curse of the Poltergeist franchise, you'd be correct. Today, we're going to explore this little slice of the cultural zeitgeist and get into what actually started this urban legend. And be warned, because today's story is truly stranger than fiction. The Poltergeist movie franchise consisted of three volumes, and critics generally agree that the first is the best. Released on June 4th, 1982, the movie is officially credited to Tobe Hooper, who directed it. Tobe Hooper is perhaps best known for giving us the cult classic movie, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. However, the movie was also ghost-directed, if you will, by Steven Spielberg, who wrote the story. He actually had a heavy hand in how the project was filmed and was, in fact, the first choice when it came to directing the movie. But he was tied up with a little project we now know as E.T. at the time. In a Vanity Fair article detailing the superstition surrounding the franchise, journalist Anthony Bresnikan maintains that there was no bad blood or feelings of animosity between the two directors, and it was very much a creative collaboration. So originally the movie was conceptualized as a big budget crowd pleaser. MGM Studios allowed up to four stages and a pool for filming, and of course recruited Steven Spielberg as a way to make sure that they would shoot things that had never been done before with this movie. The concept of the Poltergeist movie is that a young family, the Freelings, move to a new home in suburbia and get gradually and ruthlessly terrorized by malevolent ghosts, ultimately destroying their sense of safety and challenging their sense of reality. Stephen Freeling, played by actor Craig T. Nelson, is a real estate developer, and the family live in a planned community that was actually constructed by his employer. The attacks really seem to center around the Freeling's youngest child, Carol Ann, who ends up getting kidnapped by the malevolent spirits. Before I go on, I feel it's only fair to give you a massive spoiler alert ahead. Ultimately, the spirits tormenting the Freelings are a result of their home being built on the site of a Native American burial ground. So, Poltergeist is a movie about a place that holds evil, even supernatural, energies. It examines how these energies can actually spill over into our world and affect our waking lives. In ghost lore, poltergeists are spirits that cause physical disturbances. So think eerie sounds and scraping, kitchen cupboards opening and closing, and other physical manifestations of our fears. The first movie of the Poltergeist franchise really did live up to its promise of doing things that had never been done before by making use of extreme and even questionable props. This caused real fear in the performers. One very well-known example of this is the infamous pool scene. In this scene, Mrs. Freeling, played by actress Jo Beth Williams, is running for her life in the backyard of her home. There is a torrential downpour, classic, and she slips in the mud and falls into an unfinished swimming pool, so a literal hole in the ground. There's mud and sludgy water, and unfortunately for her, she's not alone in there, because she's soon swimming in a sea of skeletal corpses. Craig Nelson, in the Vanity Fair article, described how the water smelled so horridly after days of filming, it had what he referred to as amoebas, and he genuinely thought that the water was just filled with diseases. This fact was supported by Jo Beth Williams. She said how the peat moss that was placed into the water to give it that thick, sludgy texture had begun to rot, so it was causing the entire pool to smell like dog poop. That, coupled with the thought of the sickness in the water, made Jo Beth very hesitant, to say the least, to endure take after take. But there was something else bothering her, and her fears were so intense that at some point, Steven Spielberg had to stay in the water with her to reassure her during the filming of the pool scene. Now, here's where things fall into the realm of Hollywood legend. It turns out the skeletons that were used in the pool scene were real. Jo Beth Williams, for her part, had no idea at the time, having been told this after the fact many years later by a colleague in the special effects team that worked with her on the movie. The first question I have is why, quickly followed by how. Well, it turns out using real skeletons was more cost-effective than creating fake ones out of rubber. According to Vanity Fair, the origin of the skeletons that were used were never traced. I really could not believe this when I read it. It seemed so wild, but it was true. And there was actually a lawsuit against Spielberg at one point for something else. And special effects makeup artist Craig Reardon swore under oath in a deposition that real skeletons were in fact used, and that he and his team were responsible for making them have more of a dramatic, spooky effect. He even said that they were given 13 of them. And that's not all. Here are just a couple of other insidious things that happened during filming. Jo Beth Williams said that while Poltergeist was in production, she would leave her house and come back the day of filming to find that her paintings and wall hangings would all be askew. They would be twisted and hanging crooked all over the place. Zelda Rubinstein, who played psychic Tangia Behrens in the film, said that she had a vivid psychic experience. She said she was visited in a waking vision by her dog, who she felt was there to say goodbye. She received a call hours later by a caretaker informing her that her dog had unfortunately passed away. James Caan, who wrote the tie-in novel for Poltergeist, said that he lived in Steven Spielberg's office while writing the novel, and that as he was writing about thunder and lightning happened in real life, just outside the office window. What's more, the lights began to flicker, and the air conditioning unit behind him burst off the wall and hit him in the back of the head. Then, apparently the lights flickered again, and all the video games in the room turned on at the same time. Which I know at first thought when we hear this stuff, we think, yeah, right, that didn't happen. But I've had similar things happen, where I'm like, no one is gonna believe me, but the craziest thing just happened. So, moving on. Dominique Dunn, the actress who played the oldest Freeling daughter, Dana, had once claimed that she saw bookshelves tip on set and books flying everywhere. And here, my dear listeners, is where things get very dark. Dominique Dunn was just 22 years old when she wrapped up the filming of Poltergeist on October 30th, 1982. 3 months after the movie hit theaters, she was rehearsing lines for a new miniseries that she was set to star in with her co-star, David Packer, when her ex-boyfriend, John Sweeney, showed up at her house unexpectedly. David Packer can recall them arguing on the porch of Dominique's house before hearing screaming, two smacks, and a thud. The police were eventually called, and when they arrived, they found John crouching over Dominique. "I killed my girlfriend," he said. Dominique was brought to the hospital, but she never regained consciousness. She died 5 days later when she was removed from life support. She had been strangled to death. This would be the first, but not the last death centered around the Poltergeist franchise. By the time production started on Poltergeist 2, it was felt that the set was cursed by Dominique's very untimely and tragic passing. Poltergeist 2, under a new director, was plagued with malfunctions from the jump. Some explainable, but others were downright baffling. For one, there was a machine called the Vomit Monster that suddenly stopped working. This meant that Craig Nelson, reprising his role as Stephen Freeling, was forced to pretend to puke for 10 hours straight. After hours of grueling work, they finally got the shot needed. However, when they returned to set the next morning, something had damaged the film, so all the takes were useless. Poor Craig was forced to undergo the entire process all over again. Cast and crew said that during filming, the set was filled with a sense of dread. Craig explained that his castmate, Will Sampson, who was a practicing shaman, went to the set overnight to perform an exorcism, and the next morning, it was reported by the crew that they actually did feel better. Julian Beck, who plays the film's antagonist, Henry Kane, delivered such a pained and dread-filled performance during production that it filled the cast and crew with deeply unsettling feelings. Shortly after production wrapped, but before the movie was released, Julian Beck died of a prolonged battle with cancer. He had been fighting the illness the entire time during filming. And in another shocking turn, Will Sampson, who had exercised the set during filming, ended up dying from surgery complications following the release of Poltergeist 2. His friend and castmate, Craig Nelson, recalls that when he went to Sampson's grave, the oppressive drone of cicadas, which are like little flying insects, stopped as soon as he began talking out loud to address his friend. Now, by the time production started with Poltergeist 3, the curse was in full swing. The usual set malfunction seemed to be happening again. An underwater catapult shredded a stuntman's shins. And then the director, Gary Sherman, suffered a broken leg due to a bout of clumsiness. And what was supposed to be a controlled fire ended up raging through the set, causing complete panic and chaos. All of these things happening on this movie set really do remind me of the description of a poltergeist as a physical disturbance. I mean, how can it not? And just a note, I wasn't initially going to share this, but I'll just add the disclaimer that it can't be verified. One of our source articles mentioned that an on-set consultant was found dead in his chair during a lunch break. If that's true, then wow, this just keeps getting crazier. For the third movie, very few of the original actors returned, and with very good reason, it would seem. Zelda Rubinstein, who played the psychic, actually did come back. However, she reported having another psychic vision, this time involving the death of her mother. A picture taken of her shows her with a white orb or aura around her head at the time that she received the devastating news. Young actress Heather O'Rourke also reprised her role as Carol Ann, the youngest of the children, and the seemingly attractant of otherworldly things through the franchise. At the time of filming, she had been complaining of flu-like symptoms, but kept at her work diligently. However, during a filming hiatus, Heather was admitted to a hospital, as she complained of having difficulty swallowing, and her mother had found that her hands were cold. Heather ended up dying of cardiac arrest and septic shock due to an untreated bowel obstruction. She had just turned 12 years old the month before. It was then said that Heather's mother experienced her own psychic vision just before Heather's death. And this is really, really creepy. She said that she was seated in the hospital waiting room while her daughter was being worked on by doctors in a separate room, and that she saw her daughter who proceeded to tell her, "I'm not coming back." The third installment of the Poltergeist franchise was largely filmed in Chicago's John Hancock Center. The building itself has its own legacy of the supernatural, so let's take a glimpse at its haunted history. The John Hancock Center is a 100-story building that looms over the city's magnificent Mile District. When it was built in 1968, it was actually set to become the second tallest building in the world at the time, behind the Empire State Building. The building is dark and looming. Its base is wider than its topmost part, meaning that the John Hancock Center is actually an elongated, gloomy trapezoid. What's more is the structure has some X braces on the exterior that looks very imposing, very Batman villain-esque. And it's haunted, according to many Chicago area ghost experts. It's been said that a lot of builders died during the building's 3-year construction, but even after being built, the building seemed to garner just as much attention for its ability to attract tragedy. In August of 1971, Lorraine Kowalski, who was 29 years old at the time, fell 90 stories from the apartment of her boyfriend, wealthy businessman, 45-year-old Marshall Berlin. The incident happened at 4 a.m. and was witnessed by a night watchman who reported seeing a naked woman falling and her body seemingly disintegrating as it bounced off the side of the building halfway down. Absolutely horrific. And what's even more shocking about this is that the window that Lorraine crashed through was a 54-inch square, double-paned window that was 2/4 inches thick. The field engineer of the building was quoted as saying that it was nearly impossible. The windows are capable of withstanding 85 pounds of pressure per square foot with a 2.5 safety factor. The safety factor means that the windows should withstand more than 200 pounds of pressure per square foot before breaking. In other words, it's very hard to fathom that a woman of Lorraine's size could break through that glass herself. The case was investigated as a suicide at the time, with articles published highlighting the fact that Lorraine was a widow and that she was courting Marshall, who was a wealthy man. So the story is not clear-cut, and it's definitely shrouded in a lot of mystery. Lorraine Kowalski was the building's first victim, but certainly not the last. Beloved comedian Chris Farley died in his apartment at the John Hancock Center. He was found on December 18th, 1997, having died from an apparent drug overdose. As a tie-in to our exploration of the Poltergeist movie franchise, it should be mentioned that the John Hancock Center has been known to harbor certain disturbances. Ghost tours say that in the building, alarms go off without any explanation. Small fires have started out of nowhere, and one time, an elevator dropped 84 floors for no discernible reason, trapping 6 people. No one died, thankfully. But what's more, shadows haunt the upper floors, and there have been reports of demonic activity. Oh, and of course, Lorraine's ghost haunts the hall in front of Marshall Berlin's old apartment. Then, in 2002, a section of scaffolding on the 43rd floor fell out of nowhere, landing on cars and people on the ground below. 3 people died. One thing is for sure, people have said that they generally feel bizarre when they step inside the building. In our research, we have an explanation for the dark aura that surrounds the John Hancock Center, and it actually comes from, get this, the Church of Satan founder, Antoine LaVey. He's quoted as saying, "The most disturbing shape of all is a trapezoid in its myriad forms. A perfect trapezoid is a frustrated pyramid. In fact, the place where a pyramid or a triangle is lopped off to make a trapezoid is actually called the frustum. A trapezoid says to your unconscious, 'I am here, solid as can be, more massive than an ordinary block, but something's missing, and it bothers you. He's also quoted as saying, "The John Hancock Center in Chicago looms like a sentinel in its black splendor, its sloping sides and dark color presenting a brooding spectacle with its twin devil horns, antenna, bisecting its top and continuing the frustum up and way into the sky. That its history is already grim is, to me, quite understandable." One thing's for sure, whether or not the Poltergeist movie franchise set was actually cursed, it still cemented its place in our collective unconscious as a cult classic, and perhaps more so because of the real-life horrors that seem to be attached to it. I mean, several sudden deaths, injuries, set malfunctions, and a ton of bizarre oddities. I have to wonder if Spielberg's choice to use real skeletons ended up setting in motion the Poltergeist curse. Well, that's it for me today, everyone. I hope you all have a great week, and I'll see you next Tuesday.